Conclusion. This book is primarily attempted to teach one basic paradigm, that people are whole people, body, mind, heart, and spirit. As a person engages in the sequential eighth habit process of finding or creating one's own voice, making the choice to expand his or her influence by inspiring others to find their voice, he or she increases his or her freedom and power of choice to solve his or her greatest challenges and to serve human needs. He or she learns how leadership can eventually become a choice, not a position, so that leadership, the enabling art, is widely distributed throughout organizations and society. And therefore, while we manage or control things, we lead or empower people. Regarding the people paradigm, we have learned that every human being is precious in his or her own right, endowed with enormous, almost infinite potential and capacity. We've learned that the pathway to enlarging that capacity is magnifying our present gifts and talents. Then, almost like a flower blooming in the spring, additional gifts and talents are given or opened up to us, and our hardwired capacities in all four areas are unleashed to lead a balanced, integrated, powerful life. The opposite is also the case, because if we neglect our gifts and talents, they, like the unused muscle, will atrophy and waste away. We've also learned that the culture we live and work in has softwared us for mediocrity, or in other words, to fall far short of our potential. Anything less than a whole person is a thing, and things have to be controlled or managed. This command and control industrial age software has driven the workplace to believe that the greatest source of wealth lies in capital and equipment, not in people. We've also learned that we have the hardwired power to rewrite that software, and that this power inspires us to lead, to empower people who have the power of choice and to manage things which do not. The developmental process paradigm answers the how and when questions and teaches us to consider ourselves first by subordinating what we want now for what we want later. That's the essence of true happiness. Subordinating what we want now for what we want later. This process is increasingly exciting because it is increasingly powerful in expanding our choices and our capacities. If we follow principles symbolized by a compass that always points north, we gradually develop moral authority. People trust us. And if we truly respect them and see their worth and potential and involve them, we can come to share a common vision. If through our moral authority, that is primary greatness, we can earn formal authority or position, that is secondary greatness, we can together institutionalize these principles so that body and spirit are being constantly nourished, leading to unbelievable kinds of freedom and power to expand and deepen our service. In short, the kind of leadership that inspires followership comes only when we put service above self. Organizations, both private and public, learn that they are only sustainable when they serve human needs. Again, service above self. This is the true DNA of success. It's not about what's in it for me, but about what can I contribute. It's like the anonymous verse, I sought my God, and my God I could not find. I sought my soul, and my soul eluded me. I sought my brother to serve him in his need, and I found all three, my God, my soul, and thee. Now let me just add a few final words. To you as a reader, I affirm both your worth and your potential. My sincere hope is that the principles in this book have been communicated clearly enough so that you not only have come to see your worth and potential in yourself, but that you will also find your voice and live a life of greatness by inspiring many other people and organizations and communities to find their voice. Even if you live in horrible circumstances, it is in those very circumstances that you will find your call to choose your own response. It is then that life calls out to us to serve those around us whose needs we become aware of. It is in so doing that we find our true voice in life. Hayden Klingberg Jr., author of the insightful biography of Viktor and Elie Frankl, When Life Calls Out to Us, remember one of the two projects that he worked on prior to his passing that I mentioned earlier, he articulated the central theme of Frankl's life in this way. Listen carefully. This is brilliant. For Frankl, since spirituality is in its essence self-transcendence, it brings with it human freedom. But it is not freedom from as much as freedom to. We are not free from our biological nature, whether instinctive drives, genetic legacies, or the functions and malfunctions of our brains and bodies, nor are we free from the grasp of social, developmental, and environmental influences. But we are free to take a stand toward those, even against them. We are free to do what we will with the cards we are dealt, to choose what response we will make to fateful events, to decide what causes or persons will receive our devotion. And this freedom, too, carries an obligation, too. Each of us is responsible for something and to something. By using our freedom to act responsibly in the world, we uncover meaning in our lives. It is only when our will to meaning is frustrated that we settle for the pursuit of personal pleasure, Freud, or for financial and social success, Adler. Going on with his quote, when a person exercises spiritual freedom and responsibility, there follows a host of effects, peace of mind, good conscience, and contentment. But these occur naturally, as byproducts, so to speak. But pursuing any of these directly makes their attainment improbable, or impossible, he said. There is nothing quite like striving for peace of mind to keep one edgy. To center one's effort on achieving a good conscience may lead to hypocrisy or guilt or both. To make health one's chief aim may bring on something akin to hypochondria. For Frankl, these are not ends to be pursued for their own sake or even for one's own good. Instead, they ensue naturally for persons who live for something else, for something greater. Close quote. With my deepest conviction, I affirm you with the words of General Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain, who said, the inspiration of a noble cause involving human interests wide and far enables men to do things they did not dream themselves capable of before, and which they were not capable of alone. The consciousness of belonging vitally to something beyond individuality, of being part of a personality that reaches we know not where in space and time, greatens the heart to the limits of the soul's ideal and builds out the supreme of character. Close quote. My grandfather, Stephen L. Richards, was one of my most influential mentors. My love and respect and admiration for him is boundless. His life was totally dedicated to serving others. Those who knew him considered him to be one of the wisest people they have ever known. I close in gratitude for the life motto he shared with me. Life is a mission and not a career. And the purpose of all our education and knowledge is so that we can better represent him and serve that mission of life in his name and toward his purposes. Close quote. Now let's look at a few questions which deal with using our voices wisely to serve others. I'm commonly asked, why is sacrifice so central to moral authority? My answer is, sacrifice really means giving up something good for something better. It could really be called up-leveling. That is, when a person has a vision that transcends himself, that focuses on an important cause or project that he is emotionally connected to, then the real course of least resistance is to put service above self. To such a person, it is no sacrifice. To an outside observer, it would appear to be a sacrifice because he is denying some present good. Happiness is essentially a byproduct of subordinating what we want now for what we want eventually. Rather than being the course of most resistance, sacrifice is the course of least resistance to one who is deeply, spiritually, and emotionally connected to a cause, or a calling, or the serving of another. Service above self is the ethic of all great religions and of all philosophy and psychology that is endured. Albert Schweitzer put it this way, "I know not what your destiny will be, but one thing I know. The only ones among you who will be truly happy are those who have sought and found how to serve." Close quote. Another question. The buzz used to be about TQM and quality. Then it became empowerment. The new buzzword today is innovation. What will it be tomorrow? My answer is, I suggest, or at least I hope, it will be wisdom. Unless you have principles at the center of a person's heart and soul, and in the relationships and culture of an organization, you cannot build high trust. And without high trust, you cannot have empowerment. When rules take the place of human judgment, you can't nurture a climate of innovation and creativity. Instead, you will nurture a kiss-up culture, a codependent culture. Without high trust and aligned structures and systems based on an abundance paradigm, you cannot get TQM or quality. Of necessity, the age of wisdom, in my opinion, will follow the age of information, where the essence of leadership will be a servant leader. Another question. I like the concept of a principle-centered organization. Is it possible to take this to a community? My answer, absolutely. If you can get together enough caring people who are the natural and formal leaders in education, business, government, and other professions, and even people without formal authority who have a lot of moral authority but a strong interest, and if you can get them involved in the process of teaching the 7 habits and now the 8th, and the 4 roles to organizations and families throughout the community, it is absolutely amazing what good can come from it. We have done this in many, many communities around the world.